Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Knox podcast. My name is Dan Favalli, coming at you this time without my co-host, Andrew D. Bailey, but we do have a spectaculario friend of the pod, to put this Andy Bailey superlative in there, Bleacher Report's Grant Hughes, again, a good friend of mine, and I've worked with him now for, probably too long at this point. It's been close to a decade, but we're here to deal with the fallout from the NBA trade deadline, winners, losers, buyout predictions, what it does to free agency, all that good stuff. Before we get started, I just want to remind everyone to continue rating, reviewing, and subscribing to us on iTunes. We really appreciate when you guys do that. If you've already done all that, please recommend us. Give us a shout out on Twitter to help us get those numbers up. I also know there's just a lot of you out there that have not reviewed, subscribed, or rated us based on how many listens we get every single episode. So if you could do that, we would really appreciate it. I don't necessarily like being a complete shill, but in my totally unbiased opinion, this podcast is fantastic. With that out of the way, I get to ask the question everyone always wants to know. Grant, how are you doing the day after the NBA trade deadline?
Man, I'm really struggling to remember that you don't have to call everyone a winner and a loser, because that's the mindset that you get into after the trade deadline, even though we're going to talk about that. I'm good. I will say I'm less biased than you about this podcast, probably just a little bit. And I also think it's very good and that people should listen and definitely rate and subscribe, because supposedly that's important.
Yes. And now that Grant has said that, I'm just going to edit the intro that I said before. I've actually never met him. I lied before. I was trying to create that feeling of familiarity for everybody. So his opinion is completely unbiased, and you should definitely listen to him. I do agree, though, to be serious for a second, that it is, people put winners and losers into this bucket, and there's always, when you expand it to when it's not just teams and you could say which players lost, that's an interesting thing to talk about. But this deadline specifically was just so much more complicated because of all the ramifications it had. And so I asked you to pick like three winners or losers or just things that you found interesting as a result of this deadline. And then I have my own notes and we'll see if there's any overlap. And I think that's just the best place to start. So who did you have as which team did you have as your first? I know I didn't tell you could pick a player, but if you did, who did you just have?
No, I didn't pick a player. I think I'll give you a team in a second. I suspect we'll have pretty similar teams. But the one thing, like the winner, I think, if you wanted to get kind of macro about the whole thing, is just looking at how many really good teams kind of took shots at the deadline, particularly at the top of the East. Made some sort of more present focused moves and, you know, cost themselves some future assets potentially. And to me, it's really interesting that with the Warriors right now, you know, by some measures, I think looking really like as dangerous as they've looked in a while, that wasn't enough to dissuade a lot of teams from kind of going for it, at least in a somewhat measured way. Mm-hmm. I think that's really interesting. I think it reflects that teams aren't as afraid of Golden State as maybe they should be, or certainly as they used to be. But call it what you want, you know, parity or whatever. I suppose the title odds don't reflect this because the Warriors are still massive favorites, but you know, some of these moves seem to indicate, that teams are kind of like, well, screw it. You know, we're good now. And yeah, the Warriors are out there, but let's see what happens. Which is kind of a fun thing for me.
Well, I think it's pretty telltale though that one, we've probably become numb to how good the Warriors are because they've been on a tear, and we're not even talking about them. We're discussing Kevin Durant's temper tantrum the other night.
Yeah.
So two though, I think it's noteworthy that those all-in plays were made in the East. And so
yes,
it happens. I think you look at it from the perspective that maybe we get killed by the Warriors in the finals, but to reach the NBA finals, you give yourself a shot. And if you have to get there, that's a win unto itself. And it's probably noticeable that we didn't see a team like Denver or Oklahoma City really try and up the ante for themselves this season, just because the Warriors do still loom.
Yeah. And, you know, as I'm thinking about it now too, we'll talk about them more individually, I'm sure. But, you know, if you take Milwaukee and you take Toronto and you take Philly, you know, all of those teams, in addition to, as you said, like, hey, let's get to the finals, and maybe we are or are not that scared of the Warriors, but all of those teams are also kind of trying to appease stars that can leave.
Right.
In theory, like, you know, Giannis is down the road, but if you don't think this Anthony Davis thing is going to play out again with Giannis in some form, you're crazy, because at least the media chatter is going to be similar, because that'll be the next big thing to talk about in a year. But, you know, Toronto's got to show Kawhi that, like, look, we don't mess around. The Sixers, you know, they've got Jimmy Butler to try to impress, I guess, which is important to them, to keep him. So it's kind of interesting to look at it that way, too, where some of the motivators for these moves are a little different than they are at a lot of deadlines. But to your point, yeah, like Denver, didn't do, you know, nothing. OKC, which is, I think, kind of quietly a really dangerous team, nothing of consequence. Houston, I think, can't be counted out. You know, they just kind of shuffled the chairs a little bit, but now maybe can.
So much for telling Fertitta not caring about the tax, though, right?
That's the thing, right? Like, that'll be telling. If they go out and they spend on the buyout market a little bit and sort of get back to where they were before a lot of these moves, then maybe that goes away. But it looks pretty obvious to me that this team is kind of like at a bad time, too, because they were so good. They've just decided that, like, we're not going to be taxpayers, even if it potentially costs us a chance to win a title, which is crazy to me.
Well, it's probably tough to pay the tax for this team right now with the way things have unfolded with injuries and Chris Paul.
Yeah. But an unwillingness, I think the unwillingness to pay the tax goes back far enough to the point where you can say that contributed to why this team looked like it did, you know, if you go back right to over the summer. But yeah, you know, the Rockets weren't really a team I was going to talk about, but I think if I had to pick just now, I'll give you one, and I have another one in each conference. But I mean, the Bucks to me, Mirotić felt like sort of the cleanest addition of any of those that the teams up at the top of the East made. He doesn't take anything off the table for them. He sort of obviously gives them more spacing, which John Horst specifically talked about, like, I think it was today, how they value these 4-point shooters, these guys that can shoot 30 footers above the break, and Mirotić is another one of those guys. And so the spacing he unlocks, the ability to play him at the four with Giannis at the five against certain playoff matchups, like, it just is such a clean fit. And they gave up, I mean, ultimately it was like kind of like Thon Maker for him, if you look at sort of with some other stuff in there. But like, they did not give up a lot to get a guy that I think just fits really, really well. And the Bucks, by the way, already were the best team in the East. And some of the other, you know, Toronto, the Gasol fits, I think he's an improvement, but, you know, there are things to work out there. The Sixers, I'm sure we'll talk about, it's kind of clunky, but that pick just, I mean, that trade just worked for me.
Yeah, it's a clean fit, and it's, you know, where you look at, if you're talking about Harrison Barnes in Sacramento or Tobias Harris in Philly, there's just, those guys are used to having the ball in their hands a little bit more, and
yeah.
Mirotić had a pretty okay workload in New Orleans, but almost half his shots were catch and shoot threes. So that's a perfect fit right there. And as you kind of talk about, there will be some defensive versatility there. He's not a great defender, but if you play Giannis at the five, you could sacrifice Mirotić because he has some girth to him and have him defend the actual center.
Yeah, my go-to line on Mirotić is basically he's a better defender than you think, because his profile.
If you put him on a center, he's actually probably going to win more battles than you would.
Yeah, he's okay there. He's not going to get beaten up. And I mean, if your goal is to preserve Giannis a little bit, even though he's such a monster that like there aren't that many centers that could body him or beat him up, but. Yeah, it's just that the fit totally works on both ends. I think Mirotić is really good, as a role guy. And you know, the Bucks didn't, they just, the ability to get him for so little, is really kind of shocking. I can't believe they weren't outbid.
I'm actually a little bit offended that you're disrespecting those Washington second round picks. Like, I don't think it was an unfair price to pay, but you have to know when to cut your losses, but they were high on Thon Maker because it was put in that three-team deal, and then you gave up 4 second-round picks is a lot. Let's call the Denver one worthless because it's protected for its bottom five protected, and there's actually a chance that that won't go to New Orleans. Then Milwaukee's 2020 second rounder, fine, you're going to be good because you have Giannis, but both those Washington picks at the same time. What I will say that this, it added another intrigue of layer their offseason because you have Middleton, Brogdon, Brooke Lopez, and Bledsoe entering free agency, there was a path after their salary dump to keeping all four of those guys while staying under the tax. And I'm not here to say that people go at me on Twitter at all the time when I start talking about, not all the time, but when I've talked about the tax. I'm not trying to save owners money. It's just the reality that not all markets, not all owners want to pay the tax. And so if you want to keep those guys and you're able to stay under the tax while you have to pay them, that's good. Mirotić is, it's one, is it a sign that they could be willing to pay the tax if they bring him back with everybody? Or more likely, is it maybe he's this contingency? Because if I'm not saying he can't replace Chris Middleton or Brogdon or Eric Bledsoe, but if you lose one or two of those guys, now you have Mirotić to kind of fall back on as an impact guy.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, to me, I have to admit I'm not the biggest Bledsoe fan. I think it may just be because I watch more, just randomly more bad Bledsoe games than good ones. But I don't know that Mirotić to me is on that different of a level from, you know, Middleton, Brogdon, Bledsoe. He's probably inferior to all three. I mean, I actually really like Brogdon.
He's like scoring a zillion points a game. And whenever I watch the Bucks, it doesn't feel that way.
So he's another guy. Like, if you catch a good Brogdon game, you walk away thinking like, oh my God, like this guy is the greatest backcourt role player of all time because he doesn't miss shots. He's super crafty around the rim. He has all these weird little reverse layups that he gets off the ground like 6 inches, but still finishes over power forwards and stuff. He can't do that every day. I feel like he and Bledsoe, if you get a good Bledsoe game and a good Brogdon game, the Bucks, it's like impossible for them to lose, but those just don't happen all the time. Mirotić, I think, potentially is kind of the same way. If he goes 6 of 9 from three, Milwaukee's never going to lose. But he's just not always going to do that. I don't know. All the free agents on that team do make it interesting. But really, if they do lose those guys or some of them, you have to think that if Giannis just, you know, runs roughshod through several playoff rounds, they're going to get to be one of those teams. Maybe they already are, that just has the ability to sort of, you know, pick and choose vets to fill roles going forward for a couple years, potentially.
Yeah, I think they were clear. All those picks, it's a lot, but I think it's a fair price with Maker thrown in there. And so they were just, I think they were obvious winners, and they were after the Sixers kind of fired the first shot with Tobias Harris. It's just to see those contenders kind of go at one another. And like you said, Mirotić is an easy fit for them. I actually did not have the Bucks because I thought maybe you would pick them. Mine is, I don't know if I would consider them a winner or a loser. I have them as a TBD, and I tilt closer towards the loser side if you're forcing me to choose. The Philadelphia 76ers, they, at first, the Tobias Harris trade at first blush, now this isn't me having hindsight as the benefit, I wrote about this immediately after it happened, and I was still just so confused because you're bringing in a guy who, yes, he's become a really good shooter, but he's used to working on the ball too. He was taking a bunch of pull-up jumpers with the Clippers and hitting them at a high clip. How do you make this all work with Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler, and Harris, even if one or both of Butler and Harris are just willing to be the guys that don't get to dribble too much, that neither one of them are players you want to bring off screens and make move a ton without the ball necessarily. And that kind of complicates your offense. Also, and this is with the benefit of hindsight, it looked like a lot to begin with to give up so much for an expiring contract. When you saw the Mavericks and the Wizards basically salary dump Otto Porter and Harrison Barnes. I know the Mavericks got Justin Jackson and the Wizards got Bobby Portis. That's not like, I don't know, that's not a huge asset. And so you gave up two first rounders, one of which, that Miami pick, was considered a scorching hot commodity.
Right.
2 seconds, or was it 3 seconds? They sent so many picks.
I think it's at least two, for sure.
Yeah, they sent, it was two. It was a 2020 first round pick, 2021 first round pick from Miami, 2021 second round pick from Detroit, and a 2023 second round pick from Detroit. So just to give up Landry Shamet and 4 picks, I actually think Mike Scott is going to help the Sixers too. So there, if you look at it that way, and who doesn't love Boban? I'm so in love with the fact that him and Tobias are still a package deal.
Right.
I just don't know that I could view them as winners. And the last point I'll make on that is, if you're going to pay, a lot of people seem to think that Tobias is just going to get max money. I'm not necessarily convinced, and I'm not even talking about the Sixers give him 5 years so he takes a discount. I'm of the mind, is he going to get the $32.7 or whatever $1 million it is? And if you give it to him, and if you pay Jimmy Butler, by the time Ben Simmons signs his max extension, if it's not going to be the Supermax, which I actually guess it could, but let's say it won't, that's almost $130 million for Embiid, Simmons, Harris, and Butler by 2020-2021. That's so much money. And I'm also wondering, did this trade force them to sell lower than they could have or should have on Markelle Fultz? Because there was, maybe there was never a path to him coming back and fitting in, but when you bring in a fourth scorer who prefers to have the ball in his hands, and again, Harris is a good shooter, it might work out. I would feel more comfortable if he was your number three guy as opposed to number four. Did they look at this and say, well, there's no way that Markelle Fultz has a future here now? Maybe the Tyler Johnson trade impacted it too, where they were like, well, that's just another guard suitor out the window for this summer. So I don't know if that became a mitigating factor for because of this trade.
Yeah, I mean, I want to stick on that, on the Harris deal, but so one of my other winners was the Clippers, and it's not necessarily true that, you know, the Clippers I thought were winners. Therefore, you know, since they traded Harris to the Sixers, that makes the Sixers losers. But I think, like, if you just view the transaction, and obviously both teams' goals are different. But I maybe you'll disagree with this, but I don't think anyone could say from an asset perspective that the Clippers didn't win that deal, quote unquote. Because to me, you know, if you consider the cap space they cleared, the potential headache of trying to re-sign Harris to a deal that was probably going to be too rich, I think Shamit's a really, like, a potentially really good rotation guy that's, you know, cost controlled forever. The picks they got, like, I think that's a win for them. But the thing about Harris to me is, I've been starting to think about players in kind of a different way. And Harris to me is more of like a floor raiser than anything else. And so if you're viewing him as the Sixers, as this is our fourth option now, he is going to have to scale back his usage. He's going to be in a role that's a lot different than the one he was in. But we're also going to pay him like a superstar, because if he were on a 500 team, as basically he was this year, he can be like your number one option, but he's not going to be that for us. But because he could be somewhere else, if we want to keep him, we probably have to pay him like that. So it's sort of a weird allocation of resources for a guy that on the Sixers should just be making $7 or $8 million for what they're probably going to have him do. To me, it was a strange move by the Sixers, although one, like, I sort of get, they just decided we need a bunch more talent at the top end. I don't know if I'd call them a winner or a loser. The Clippers are, I think, a clear winner for me at the deadline overall, but, that deal kind of pushes the Sixers maybe a little bit towards loser, but if they make the finals or even the East finals, then, you know, I guess it's justifiable in from one perspective.
It would have made more sense to me too if he wasn't on an expiring contract. If you could right. say, oh, he has next year too. And I'm not saying because you lose him, but his salary is going to skyrocket. And you ended up, you didn't salary dump Markelle Fultz because you did get the first round pick. You got a second round pick. But if you were going to get rid of his salary, there was a path to opening up the Tobias Harris level max contract. I'm not saying he definitely would have gone to Philly. And maybe that's a signal that Philly doesn't think they would be a free agent destination.
That's weird to me. They should be. They should view themselves that way, don't you think?
As not a free agent destination?
No, they should view themselves as a free agent destination, because you've got, you know, Simmons and Embiid. I think they're pretty well respected around the league. I think, you know, guys would look at them and say, like, man, I just got to come in and, you know, do my JJ Redick impression, insofar as anyone in the league can do that, which I don't know they can, but, you know, the role guys and even stars, the, you know, star-ish players should want to play there. I think Philly's free agent money, you know, it's certainly worth more than the teams we always talk about as, you know, having cap space not mattering. Like, they're not the Kings, they're not the Pacers, they're not the, you know, whoever you want to list. I think the Sixers would have been a destination.
And you would also think that LeBron giving them a phone call, whatever that fake thing was last summer, that sort of puts them on the map. Like when he met with the Clippers in 2010. Oh, LeBron was interested in playing for them.
Yeah, I mean, they should be. They're really good. They have two young cornerstones. I think people like Brett Brown. I think, they're on the short list of like desirable free agent destinations. So that's another aspect that, yeah, I agree. It makes the move a little bit strange. There were other avenues that they could have accumulated a lot of talent. although not for this potential run to the finals.
Right. And then I guess they could look at it as, well, this way we have, you know, JJ Redick on early bird rights. We don't have to renounce him. He's having a hell of a year. So perhaps there's value in that for them. It's just, it makes me feel uneasy because this is the type of thing that seems like it's going to take time to work out if it's going to work out. And people have discussed whether Tobias Harris would leave. Maybe they're that confident and they could be right that there's just going to be all these max offers for him in free agency. I know he's a top 10 name in the free agent market, but I just never viewed him as this max formality. I thought Chris Middleton was closer to that than him. What about Jimmy Butler? If they get bounced in the second round, I could just see Jimmy Butler leaving.
Well, and, you know, I guess I've kind of come to be pretty anti-Jimmy Butler, like if I had to pick a camp. And if you're the Sixers, like, I don't know that that's the worst thing because he's, you know, he's got to be at the tail end of his prime, I think, or at least, you know, starting the descent. And he's extremely difficult to have around, I think we can safely say. And he's the type of player that is best served being your number one option. And it's always just it's death to install a guy at a certain age that is a high usage number one option and then pay him a bunch of money as his decline starts, because the whole dynamic, in addition to him just production wise not being worth it, the whole dynamic of the team still depends on this guy being viewed as the alpha. And if he doesn't deserve to be, even though he's being paid like it, I think that just throws like several wrenches into the works of your, you know, whatever you want to call it, your organizational culture, your team chemistry. So there's a weird amount of instability with a Sixers team that is really good and has two just locked in cornerstones. It's kind of a weird dichotomy for them. Well, but I got a Knicks question for you after you finish up on the Sixers.
Oh, that's unfortunate. But what you touch on sort of brings up a larger overarching question of, if Butler leaves, it could be better functionally for the Sixers. It certainly makes Tobias Harris a more sensible player for them. At the same time, after you burn through, so now Markelle Fultz, Robert Covington, Dario Saric, Landry Shamet, two first-round picks, and three second-rounders in the same season, you have to have more to show for it than Tobias Harris and OKC's top 20 protected pick in 2020. That has to happen.
It's so kind of lame to talk about the process still, but if I really feel like this deadline was like the end, this is like almost the anti-process. Like the process is officially over now. Like those assets are gone more or less. I think if the Kings get the number one pick, the Sixers get it still, but that's basically the end of their, you know, all those blue chip assets they have. Maybe I'm wrong, but the process is over now. It's like, now these are the guys. And as far as Butler and Harris are concerned, they might not even be there long-term. So it's definitely a new era for the Sixers. But for the Knicks, a simple question. Were they a winner? Were the Knicks a winner? Is that possible?
What would be the argument for them to be a winner?
Well, okay, so I know we were texting about this like basically right after the Porzingis trade happened, and if I recall, I was kind of like, well, they better know that they're getting Durant or whoever else. But I don't even know if I think that needs to be part of the equation now, because the more I thought about it, the less I'm certain that Porzingis is a max guy, or just build in the injury risk, build in all the uncertainties. Like, I would have reservations about maxing him out. And he didn't want to be there, I guess. I guess I believe that, even though the Knicks PR machine is, you know,
he definitely didn't want to be there. There's no way they traded him because of his quote unquote trade request. That didn't happen.
So you're right. Right. No question. That was BS. So he's like less of a, just a can't possibly lose this guy asset than maybe I thought, you know, even a week ago. They cleared all that money. I think Dennis Smith is deeply flawed, but we give up on point guards way too early all the time. And to get picks back, to get those firsts. I just think, I don't know if this future, if you weigh this future with all its possibilities, that granted, all the Knicks have ever done is mess up possibilities. If you weigh that against, like, what are we going to do with Porzingis? How are we going to get off Hardaway's money? Can we get anything for Courtney Lee? Our draft assets aren't as great as they could be. I kind of think like the Knicks position themselves pretty well, and to the point where if they had a front office that I had more confidence in, and certainly ownership that I was more confident in, I'd be like, man, these guys look a lot like the Clippers to me. Not quite, but like they've got a plan. They're collecting assets. They're getting rid of all these uncertain things that maybe they'd have to overpay to keep. I think like if it wasn't the Knicks and this was just Team X, you'd be like, man, these guys are kind of, they got something going right now. But it is the Knicks. And so that's why I have to ask if you think that they were a winner.
I don't. I wouldn't call them a flat-out loser, and I wrote a piece about teams that kind of blew it at the deadline and didn't include them.
Which is a win for them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And I've said this before, so apologies to anyone who's listening to this twice, but if you needed to clear the cap space, you worry about it when you actually need to clear the cap space. And so,
yeah, that's fair.
And now, but my bigger problem was there was a path. If you don't sign two stars now, it's a failure because there was a path to keeping Porzingis and opening up Kevin Durant's money. You didn't even technically, I'm not saying it was the most efficient path, but you didn't even need to technically get rid of money. You could have stretched Courtney Lee and been in Kevin Durant territory just about. Or you could have sweetened the salary dump when you needed to, because it was clearly possible. I know the Mavericks got Porzingis, but he was injured and he's about to make a ton of money. So they have those Charlotte picks. I think it would have taken maybe a second rounder. The notion was that they needed a first to get rid of Courtney Lee this year, which fair, but it probably takes 2 second rounders to get rid of Courtney Lee over the summer, would be my guess. And so you make that decision when you know Kevin Durant is coming. What others might say is they obviously know that Kevin Durant is coming, because what team would make this deal without knowing that? And I'm going to tell you the team that would make this
deal. Yeah, right. Go for it.
It's the Knicks. And I think that's what's so uneasy. And I don't think you brought up a good point about the front office. Maybe it would even be different if they had a clear cornerstone in place. Now you don't. Porzingis was that. And it made more sense to roll the dice on him until you didn't need to anymore. And they still needed to, in my opinion. And I will never believe the bullshit that he's going to sign his qualifying offer.
No. Never.
It was no one in his position has ever done that. He's coming off an ACL injury. You had leverage. Don't pretend like you didn't. And you don't trade players just because they don't want to be there. The Pelicans didn't do it with Anthony Davis. They're going to wait to the summer and drum up a bidding war. You don't. The Knicks had leverage to play. And I don't think the deal ends up being bad. Like you said, the picks, maybe Dennis Smith Jr. is better than expected. But now you lose that cornerstone equity. Kevin Knox looks good. I don't know that he's ever going to be more than a number three guy in the NBA.
If that, yeah, I agree.
Frank Ntilikina is one of the worst offensive players I've ever seen to date. And I blame so much of that on the Knicks because they haven't even begun to like help him find a wheelhouse. He's a good defender already. Dennis Smith Jr., he's just so herky-jerky, like, watching him. I always feel like he's going to, like, his soul is going to fall out of his body on some of his drives because, he's one of those running backs that makes, like, too many, like fakes, like, with his body, and nothing about it looks natural or good. But I would say that he is a sophomore, and people obviously gave up on him a little too early if they're out on him already. There's just so much risk involved in this. If you don't sign, that's where I end up is now you need Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And those are what other stars are coming if it's not them, by the way. It's Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Not is Kawhi Leonard gonna look at New York? Maybe you could get Butler and Kyrie Irving, but I don't want a part of like Butler's next contract could end up being an Amari Stoudemire like situation at this point, given he has Tibbs miles on him and he's gonna be, I think he turns 30 before next season. So now you've tethered yourself to this finite window of possibilities, particularly if you don't win the lottery. Everyone's like, and I have to constantly remind anyone who says it to me, well, they're just going to flip their pick and other stuff after they get Durant and Kyrie Irving for Anthony Davis. No, that's not going to happen. They have an 86% chance of not ending up with Zion Williamson. They have.
Right. So and if they get Zion, do not trade Zion. That would be, I don't care who's on the team. I'm not trading that pick.
You need to have, and that's the other thing, you need to have players on your team. This might be a good time to talk about the Lakers. I understand that they were offering, in many ways, a poo-poo platter to the Pelicans, which I think the Pelicans should have waited. I also don't think the Lakers should have given up everybody. I know it's Anthony Davis, but there needs to be someone else aside from LeBron left on your roster. If they were, when they went to two first-round picks and all five of their young players, including Zubac, in that last reported deal, that was a step too far for me. And there were people saying that they should include a third pick, and that would, I don't even know if New Orleans would have accepted that, but now you've put yourself at this baseline to where they're going to come back over the summer and say, well, you offered us this, you can't offer us less now. The only thing that can really go well for the Lakers is the Knicks end up like third or fourth in the lottery, and then the Celtics lose Kyrie Irving, so that you've lost two great offers probably for Anthony Davis, because I don't think that Boston gives up Tatum if Kyrie's not coming back.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess we should talk about the Lakers. I have so many thoughts on just like how clumsy and how sort of it was weird. It's like both Clutch and Davis from that side, and then the Lakers from the other side, which you might just say is all Clutch, really. But they were both like trying to force a square peg into a round hole, like from both directions. If that makes it's a terrible analogy, but it's like the pieces weren't good enough. And Davis, like they from his side, they just handled it so ridiculously with all these leaks and all these leverage plays and all this nonsense that the fit doesn't make sense. It doesn't, like, it's not the best return package for the Pelicans. And even if they did think that, it's way too much for the Lakers the Lakers are just going to be like, well, we have 35-year-old LeBron and Anthony Davis now and basically nothing. So what do we do with that? It's just such a strange thing where, you know, Davis and his team just so badly want to get to LA that, like, it's almost like they just don't care that it's definitely not the best place for him to go, and it's definitely not the best place for the Pelicans to trade him, which is like a separate concern. It's been so weird to me just from the get-go on this, that, like, I just, and to say nothing of like the havoc that, I mean, yeah, they won last night and everything looked fine, but, you know, half of the Lakers roster has to be like, there's a dude on our team that is basically dictating our futures, and I'm uncomfortable with that. It's a whole big messy thing. I guess I don't have one overarching thought. It's just a lot of scattered like confusion about the whole deal.
Well, they were one of my actual losers, and it's not because they didn't trade for Anthony Davis. It's because the negotiations became so public.
Yeah,
and right. I know it's hard to keep these things under wraps when they're this big. But we didn't hear about the Tobias Harris trade until it happened. And at the very least, all these offers that were becoming public, they were coming from different sides, people with different agendas. It turned the Lakers into a caricature of a basketball team. I mean, you're talking about LeBron's going to trade you for Brandon Ingram in Indiana, a locker room scuffle after the loss to the Golden State Warriors involving two players that weren't even in the Anthony Davis trade talks.
Right.
LeVar Ball going full of LeVar Ball again on behalf of Lonzo Ball. Pictures of LeBron sitting on the bench, three chairs removed from his teammates, and then the tampering jokes in the middle of the All-Star thing. They come out, they have that big win over the Celtics. Maybe it's smooth sailing from here. But even if Anthony Davis was striking out on him, it was unavoidable. That's how I look at it. I don't think that this drama was unavoidable. It very easily could have been handled more properly.
No question. It was unavoidable. And that fact is made worse by Rich Paul and LeBron and whoever is really behind all this. Like, they, I think, thought, oh, this is the way to make this happen. Like, we are going to be the squeakiest wheels you can imagine. We're going to do all this leverage play. We're going to leak everything, because this is the best way to get what we want. And it turned out that was 100% untrue. It was the worst way, which, if I don't understand, like, if you've ever negotiated with anyone for anything, this is like the what not to do section in the textbook. None of it made sense. The other thing, this is going to be a tangent, but like, I think this again underscores the fact that having a superstar player or a historically great player or whatever we want to call LeBron, has so many downsides, because I just think we have every example in the world now of really, really good players suck at deciding who they should play with. Like LeBron, I mean, Michael Jordan is a terrible owner. I think he's a terrible judge of talent. Like, he's made all these mistakes. He's a great basketball player, but he's not good at any of the other things about being involved with a basketball team. And I really think that's true of LeBron, because look at the free agent moves they made in the summer that everyone just immediately agreed were just ridiculous. And then the way that this has played out, I just think, like, he's not good at personnel, like, he's good at a lot of aspects of media management. He's been very good at sort of cultivating a brand. But in terms of, like, to the extent he's behind any of this Clutch stuff, It was so clumsily done. And you have to let him do this stuff. And it probably was promised to him as a condition of coming to the Lakers, like you're going to have say and stuff, or it didn't even need to be said because he's LeBron. There's all these downsides to having a guy like that on your team that we really saw play out over the last several weeks.
And there's going to come a point, probably not financially because of his brand that you talked about, where he's not going to be worth all this trouble. And it's,
yeah,
I think it's oversimplifying it if we were to sit here and say that LeBron's the GM of the Lakers, but the Lakers aren't making this give up our entire team for Anthony Davis play before the summer if LeBron's not on the team or if LeBron doesn't want it. It's just not want it now. Like, that's just not happening because it makes more sense if you're going to trade so much for Anthony Davis, it makes more sense to wait to the summer because then you're going to have a chance to sign another star first. I think the last reported version of the deal had them taking back Solomon Hill. And so if they stretched him, they could have gotten a little bit more than $25 million, but you take yourself out of the superstar conversation at that point. So there is going to come a time where he's not worth it. And I think this actually worked out for them is, yes, they might still have to give up the same offer just without the salary flotsam that they were going to send over this season. But at least now you have an opportunity to go out in free agency and look at guys, though I don't know what their willingness to take on Solomon Hill says about their view of free agency. And when you start to look at the superstar pool, Clay is going back to the Warriors. Everyone thinks Kevin Durant's going to the Knicks. For Kyrie Irving, I think people would pick the Knicks or the Celtics. Tobias Harris, I don't know if they're going to try poaching him. That's when you're getting into the tier two names. Maybe they would have a chance at Kemba, who, if Charlotte's going to offer him 5 years, I don't think he would leave. Who's the superstar that they're going to get? Is it Jimmy Butler? It says, I think you could make a case that free agency specifically, of the top 10 to 15 names that are out there, Kyrie Irving is the most likely one to sign with the Lakers. And that's not a good place to be if you're Los Angeles.
Can we say with any degree of certainty, because I'm kind of warming up to this idea, that guys maybe don't want to play with LeBron, like as a default position for a lot of stars in the league? Yeah, right. Well, Kyrie would agree, I guess. Well, he's turned over a new leaf or whatever he said in the last 10 minutes. Who knows? But you know what? Like, I totally understand it because it doesn't seem like it would be fun. And now, as you say, I mean, look, we've thought LeBron was on borrowed time in terms of his prime for each of the last like maybe 4 or 5 years even. Because no one that plays at the level he got to, you never assume they're going to continue to be that good. And since he's so great, he's held on. But like, we're going to get to a point where just his play on the floor will not remotely justify the level of sway that he has and the headache and all that stuff. And I think it's definitely going to come on the contract that he's on. He's not going to be LeBron at the end of this contract. I don't feel like there's any way that's possible. So like the Lakers window, and this speaks to their urgency, I think. The Lakers window is really small if they think that LeBron is going to be the anchor of their next championship team.
Let's punt on this season, probably the next 2 years.
Maybe. I mean, because are you going to tell me that in 2020, 2021, which is going to be just the worst year ever to have to say a lot, I've just realized, by that year, I would be stunned if LeBron was a top five player. Because the mileage, it doesn't happen. Guys don't stay this good for this long. So I don't know what their window is. They may not even have a window unless just something insane happens and they collect like three more All-Stars somehow, which seems unlikely. So I guess viewed that way, just the total desperation they showed in trying to get this deal for Davis done makes a little bit of sense. Cause I think maybe they're acknowledging that like LeBron is, you know, there's a finite amount of months probably where, you know, LeBron and one other star are going to get you where you need to go.
The question I asked Andy, and I'm going to ask you too, to put a bow on this Lakers stuff. If I could give you for an Anthony Davis destination, Lakers, Boston, or the field, which are you taking?
Like as the next team that he plays for?
Yeah. Assuming he's probably going to play for the Pelicans now, but I'm talking where he's where he's going to end
Boston.
Up.
Doesn't it have to be Boston?
I took the field.
Okay, that's definitely the smart statistical play. But where in the field do you have a field team that is up there for you, or are you just playing the math?
There's a well, I guess there's the math, but I think if there's one, the Knicks can do something interesting, especially if Kevin Knox and Dennis Smith, either one of them, look at all good to finish the year. If they finish, if they end up with a top three pick, and you're willing to give up both those players, that package can get really interesting, depending on what other picks they're going to include. With Boston, I don't trust Kyrie Irving at all, in kind of a good way, because I appreciate the chaos he creates. And so if he leaves, Jason Tatum's immediately out of that package. And I'm not convinced that while they discussed Jason Tatum now, there was nothing that came out that said Ainge committed Jason Tatum to New Orleans. And I don't think he's above trying to get it done without without Jason Tatum in the deal. And it makes some sort of sense, because if the Knicks don't have the number one pick, couldn't you argue that between those three teams, the packages might be on semi-even footing? If the Celtics aren't including Jason Tatum, if the Knicks aren't including the number one pick because they don't have it, and then you just have whatever the Lakers offer is, those offers are probably pretty close.
And yeah, I still... No, go ahead.
And the other thing I'll say is if Kawhi ends up staying in Toronto, they can make an incredibly interesting offer built around salary filler. You have Fred VanVleet. Give a bunch of picks. You have OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam, and it would kind of enable, because of how good Siakam already is. And then let's say if your salary filler is Ibaka as that anchor, it kind of enables you to straddle two timelines.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. That's a good case for the field if you throw Toronto in there, for sure. I think number one, I really think the Pelicans just don't want to trade Davis to the Lakers under any circumstances. I think it's like,
I'm here in for addition that pettiness, to, by the way.
Yeah, I'm here for the pettiness for sure. I kind of love how they handled it. Just stonewalling and just letting the leaks come out and just who cares. But so that I kind of keep coming back to Boston, just because maybe it's naive, but I do think Kyrie's going to stay. Although I don't know, now that I'm thinking about it, the whole Knicks thing just kind of smells funny to me that he might end up there. But I don't know. I think if Tatum's on the table and Kyrie is still in Boston, I think that's just a no-brainer. Yeah. But I mean, there are a couple of gigantic ifs involved in that one. So the field is not a bad pick at all, actually. I'm kind of coming around to your thinking.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm just fascinated to see how this kind of plays out. And again, the Kyrie Irving stuff, it's just so much could determine the postseason. If Gordon Hayward doesn't look good, the Celtics get bounced in the second round. I mean, Kyrie Irving could leave. Like, I'm at that point where I think I'm never in the business of giving the Knicks the benefit of the doubt, but their salary dump was so flagrant that it just feels like there might be something there. And I'm still trying to just play it off as there's not, because I don't want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Who was your other team? I know you had the Clippers.
As my winners?
Yeah.
I had the Bucks and Clippers as my winners, and then I had Knicks, ? So which we already kind of covered them. And then I guess I put
the winners.
Yeah, man. It comes back to, and this is probably stupid, but it seems like this is part of a pretty big plan, and I'm kind of excited by it. So if in fact they were just repeating the stupid cap clearing mistakes of the past, then I will apologize profusely for even thinking they were something like a winner. But I don't know. I guess my overall take on the Porzingis trade was that it's super fun for Dallas, but that just from an asset perspective, I kind of like what the Knicks did better.
Yeah, people definitely undersold how much of a risk Dallas is taking.
Yeah.
I would just want to know, and I think this has a dovetail with the Kevin Durant stuff and how he reacted to the media the other night, is it – If the Knicks don't get superstars, is there a path to them still for you viewing that trade as you do now?
It depends what they do with those picks. So maybe. I mean, it looks way worse. But I think you have to factor in the possibility that Porzingis just, you know, this just his body doesn't, this just isn't going to work. You know, everybody talks about the, you know, he's so big, and this injury, we're just not sure, you know, what it's going to look like for a guy that's his size that plays the way he does coming off of it. And it's not like he was super healthy before the ACL. So I think the downside risk is enormous for Dallas. I'll put it this way. I think the downside risk is much bigger for Dallas than it is for the Knicks, because if the Knicks don't get their max guys, that cap space is still there. They can get something. They could immediately just make this a catastrophe, but they have sort of more, I don't know, flexible paths forward. Right. Whereas like if you're Dallas and Porzingis is just never great, then I don't know how you justify, you can't have won that deal.
What did you make of Kevin Durant's thing with the media? Just because he is so tied to the Knicks, I found it funny. Before I actually just let you give your opinion, I found it funny that he immediately jumped to the Knicks without actually being asked about it. It was just, are you frustrated because the noise is louder this year, or is it just bothering you more this year? And he was like, I don't have anything to do with the Knicks. I don't know who traded Porzingis. I found that hysterical.
That's funny for two reasons. And the first is like, you know, the guy with the guilty conscience is like, you know, he gives it up to the cops. They say, where were you last night? Well, I definitely didn't steal that car. Well, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, it's like that. It's like basically that. So that's the best reason it's funny. But the other one is it shows how, if that's not the reason, if in fact, like he didn't have anything to do with it and he was just, I don't know, making a panicked explanation. The other thing is it again underscores like how much he pays attention and listens to all the stuff about him, even though he just deeply, deeply wants to not be bothered by it. I think he's so online.
He's so online. That's a great way to put it.
He's super on. And so
Kevin's so online, Durant.
I mean, you know, the burners and all that stuff, but like, so it's not a revelation, but he hears, I think for someone who seems to be as annoyed by all the non-basketball chatter as he is, he seems to really seek out exposure to it more than most. And that was the other aspect of that comment about the Knicks that really struck me, is like, this dude cannot help himself.
It would be really funny if he just like recited there. I don't know why they created recites their salary cap space to the nearest cent or something. It would have been great.
Yeah, right. It was a little too much. I mean, I don't know. Big picture, like, can we say that like the cupcake nickname that Russell Westbrook put, you know, had for him just looks more and more apt every day? That's kind of like one of my takeaways, is that I don't know if Kevin Durant, like everyone said throughout this whole free agency thing, like I'm not even sure Kevin knows what he wants. You know, that's been kind of the refrain. And I think that's true maybe. And I think that's fine. But just, he just doesn't seem to engage with like the reality of how the NBA and the media interact. If he's not, and he seems like an intelligent guy, he seems thoughtful. He's definitely, you know, it's strange to me that he got so, emotional about it, because it's like, look at rationally how this interplay works. It's a symbiotic relationship. You're not a multimillionaire if these media people aren't asking you questions and there's not a fat TV deal and your games aren't on national television and like all this other stuff. Like, it is integral to his success. And if he wanted to just play basketball, that's cool. But that's just not how it works. And I don't know how anyone 10 years into the league could sort of continue to be annoyed by, I have to listen to these questions and non-basketball speculation. I just don't understand how you can have that position after being in the league for so long.
Right. And I think, as a member of the media, there are some times where we rush to defend other media members that get lashed out.
Of course.
My whole thing, though, is I'm fine with the players doing that. I remember Chris Paul got mad at me once in a phone interview because of a question I asked him, and it was poorly phrased. And it's fair game. And there have been players who've gotten mad about something I've written. That's fine, too. But he was just – the whole thing he did just didn't make any sense to me, which is why if I had to pick a side, I'm like Ethan Strauss of The Athletic – it's just his, because this whole thing made no sense. First of all, you can't use Ethan's piece that dropped that day as the reason that you didn't speak for 10. That doesn't
– right.
You don't get to use that. And for all the other points that you just made. And there was also just – he hasn't been asked about free agency that much, except for when he came to the Knicks or played in New York, and that was to be expected. So it's – like you said, he's so online and he gets mad about it, but this is just – it's also not a non-story. He signed these 1-year deals. It makes it a story. You can't tell me he's so plugged in with the internet. He saw what happened to Cleveland with LeBron on his deals that had those player options in them and what they became. This can't surprise you. What Draymond Green said in November, that can't surprise you. So I can understand it being exhausting, but you actually made the story because of the way your contract's structured. Whether or not you have anything to do with the Knicks chatter is a different story, But like your contract situation, you're one of the five best players in the game, and you didn't commit to the Warriors. Not only did you not commit, just like, and subtly, you said stuff at the beginning of the year that was just non-committal.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think at the root of this, a lot of it seems to be that Durant, and like, this is a fair thing to want. I think we all want this. Like, he wants to be able to be sort of authentic and say the things that he wants and not play the game, like the media game. And just, he wants to sort of exist as a normal person and not have to say the right thing or act the right way or commit to a long-term contract if that doesn't make sense for him. And it really doesn't, because he's going to get to that 10 years of service time and that's going to up his max and all that other stuff. But like I just don't understand how it can be unexpected or seem unfair to him that when you operate that way and you put yourself out there a lot, like he does a lot of long form podcasts where he's pretty loose and he, right, they'll say all these things, like there's a playbook for being in his situation and not having the distractions become overwhelming. Like you guys can say, I'm only going to answer questions about my own team. Free agency will get taken care of when it gets taken care of. You can just knock that out. And it's not like, and Marcus Thompson wrote about this today, it's not like the Bay Area media market is like bloodthirsty and is just going to relentlessly hound him with questions. If he would have said just that little playbook about let's not deal with free agency, I think he would have not had a problem. But I think he kind of wants it both ways. He wants to sort of be his authentic self and be left alone and just play basketball, as he said. But like, that's just not reality. That's not reality for anybody. We all have to just deal with BS and be fake sometimes and play the game. Like that's how life works. So that's kind of my bigger issue, is just, he's kind of out of touch with just how, how general like professional interaction operates.
Now that the final question for you on him is he gone? Is he gone? Yep. Gone? Is he coming back?
He's gone. I think he's gone.
You think it's like, just the Knicks then? There hasn't been chatter about any other team.
I think it's the Knicks. I think you can make a case for the Clippers just because their positioning is so good.
Great for Toronto because Kevin Durant called Kawhi a system player.
Right. Yeah. Right. No, I think he's gone. And like, I do have to admit, like, sometimes deep inside, like my actual Warriors fandom is still, there's like a little flickering light in there that my job for the last several years hasn't like made, you know, killed. If I just become a Warriors fan for a minute, like I'm almost at the point where I'm like, fine, go ahead. Like I liked the team before, the team's identity before, when it was just Curry and these other pieces that fit really well. I enjoyed that. I'm sort of nostalgic for it because Durant sort of, he just changed everything about what the Warriors were, for several reasons. And so like, I'm kind of cool with, let's see what like the quote unquote, you know, original guys can do. I'm kind of,
and they won't Harrison be as Barnes back at the mid level, yeah, after he opts out. Yeah.
Right. Sure. I just think, I don't know. I feel like the divorce is just kind of like, it's basically already happened. I think you can see that in some of the interaction with the teammates too. And I'm okay with it. I think it makes the league a lot more interesting if he's not on Golden State number one. But yeah, I think he's gone. Do you think he's going to stay?
I think no, but I just don't know where. I'm so reluctant to say he's going to the Knicks, and maybe that's,
you don't
want to
hope. You don't want to kindle hope.
Right. I thought they killed me, and then I actually felt something because of the KP trade. So that was, That I guess it's always good to get that reminder. I do think he's gone, but I'm so reluctant. Really, in my head, I came into this season thinking he would play at least another year, play in the Chase Center.
Me too.
That whole thing, that illusion unraveled for me with the November stuff. So it's, I don't know where he's going. I can't buy into the Knicks just all of a sudden. It would be, if they pulled this off, by the way, this summer, it'd be a bigger coup than Miami in 2010, because at least Miami had that incumbent star.
Right. And like a track record of sane management.
Of not sucking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you think his destination, it's going to be the Knicks?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like that's the safest bet.
So many people predict that.
I know. I can tell.
I interrupted you to start this. What was your other team?
That was it. If I had to pick another winner, I don't know who I'd pick. I feel like a lot of these deals were kind of like, yeah, that's okay for them. I'm curious what the Rockets do on the buyout market, because they kind of quietly, you know, tinkered around a little bit, but I certainly wouldn't call them a winner yet. I don't know. I don't have another clear winner.
James Ennis for nothing. I know he hasn't defended well, but
I feel like that's James Ennis's whole career. Like, he's been like a darling forever, because he shoots 38% or whatever it is from three, and he's theoretically a multi-position defender, but like, is maybe that's just, I don't know, like the package
Houston
just
had him defending too many guards. Is just that's okay. My probably terrible read on it, but it's he was never going to make their defense great. So I understand that the idea of James Ennis is way better than actual James Ennis.
Yeah, like Shumpert might just be better than him. I think you can make a case that he maybe is.
Both though, if you're willing to pay.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I have a TBD on the Rockets, because I don't like the tax thing is an issue, and that might make this TBD status look stupid. But if they kind of do some smart stuff on the buyout market and use up, you know, they got I think 3.3 left of their MLE. That they could use if the tax isn't an issue. I don't know. But yeah, I don't have another strong winner. Maybe do you have one? And maybe that'll jog my thinking.
I don't know how strong it is, but I think it's going to kind of surprise you. I was impressed with what the Detroit Pistons did.
Interesting. So why? You like Svi?
Yeah, I like Lakers fans. I think that he's the next cross between Kyle Korver and Bojan Bogdanovic. He's
definitely.
They didn't give up a pick. I think you could have justified going all in on a Mike Conley trade, since the Grizzlies wanted Luke Kennard and probably an unprotected pick. You probably could have spun that. But I like that, one, Blake Griffin knew about everything and was okay with it. And you got rid of two players that you were probably going to have to overpay. I mean, if you're paying Stanley Johnson at all at this point, you're overpaying Stanley Johnson. Reggie Bullock, that's someone that's a, you know, his cap hole's valuable if you're a good team, but the Pistons aren't this great team. And it looks 10 times better to me now, because you got Wayne Ellington on the buyout market. And so your playing time kind of sold itself, and he's going to help you as a shooter. Their defense has been, their opponents have missed a ton of wide open threes. So maybe with Wayne Ellington on the court, they're somehow going to get blitzed more so than they have this season so far. But I think it was just, maybe the bar's too low, where it's just, oh, it could have been so much worse, and so I'm looking at it as good. But if paying the tax, again, was a reality that they weren't willing to reckon with, this trade deadline could have gone so much worse for them. You capitalized on the departures of Stanley Johnson. I like Thon Maker there. He's not a great three-point shooter. The Pistons have zero spacing at center. And so now you can bring him off the bench and play him with Blake. If he's going to shoot 33% from three, that's an upgrade over what you had. Zaza Pachulia was your backup big that was playing the most minutes. And so you get that. And for Bullock, you get Svi, and you get a second-round pick. And you don't really have second round picks moving forward. So I thought that it was, we'll have to wait and see what they do this summer. Are they going to turn around and pay a first round pick to get off of Reggie Jackson or something? I liked what they did, where it's they're pretty much where they were, but their future looks just a little bit better because it's not as damning.
Yeah, I think that's fair. When the Maker trade happened, I kind of like got a little like twinge of excitement. Like, oh, are they gonna get rid of Drummond somehow? Like, is this like a are they gonna just really flip this position entirely and become like a 2019 NBA team all of a sudden? But obviously that was impossible. But yeah, I mean, I think they improved their situation. I just now saw the Ellington buyout signing. So that's like, I mean, you basically replaced Bullock. I mean, Bullock's younger and more reliable, and Ellington's been down this year. But I mean, in terms of like a role being filled, that's pretty much the same guy.
And so I like that from them. I'm curious as to what you thought about the Grizzlies just and the Raptors, like those two sides of the Marc Gasol trade.
Well, I mean, so for the Raptors first, because that's really the only one that matters. I kind of thought, so obviously Gasol is, I think, first of all, Gasol is like a fringe top 10 center to me now, just on balance, I think.
Totally fair.
But I think he's better than Valanciunas. I think that his player option is a little worrisome. I think that, you know, we talked about Mirotić being a clean fit. I think, you know, Gasol is the type of guy that seems like he'd be just could fit anywhere because he can pass and he can stretch the floor a little bit. And, you know, in terms of conventional centers, at least defensively, he's a really good post defender. Everyone's talking about that right now as like an Embiid, you know, kind of card you can play now in a playoff series. But like, you know, I liked Ibaka in that first unit. I don't know if he's going to supplant him there. It makes it a little weird if you – so you play Siakam at the three now with Serge and Gasol against certain teams. I mean, I feel like whereas the Mirotić move sort of opened up possibilities, I think to a greater extent the Gasol move kind of complicated things a little bit. But I mean, he's a talent upgrade, and he's kind of moody. I mean, not kind of, he's notoriously moody. And so maybe now that he's playing on a really good team, we'll see like 3 or 4 years ago, Marc Gasol instead of this one, if he still got that. I mean, I like it. I thought it was bold and really on balance, like wasn't really that costly for the Raptors. So I was okay with that. I mean, I don't know, for the Grizzlies, it's more of an emotional thing because whatever, I guess if you think DeLon Wright's going to be like a low-end starter down the line, like that's cool. But yeah, I don't know. What did you think?
I thought it was a risk that they should have made just because the offense has been not great, 13th in points per 100 possessions since December 1st. During that same time, they're 24th in three-point efficiency. So Gasol is going to help you there. I think he helps you generate more ball movement overall. And now you have the bench has not, I know they've been injured, but Toronto's bench is 19th in point differential since December 1st as well. So now you have a pathway to sort of surviving if you need to sit both Lowry and Leonard or one of them. And Lowry hasn't been making shots, so that helps you. His player option is scary, but it's also not because CJ Miles and Valanciunas basically cost the same amount next season as his player option.
A good point.
Which makes it a little easier to look at. The bigger question might be his chemistry with Kyle Lowry, who's kind of, you know, Valanciunas is more of a rim runner than Marc Gasol has ever been. Mm-hmm. So how does that impact the way that the Raptors go about their business on offense? And also, Kawhi Leonard is sort of, he's looked out of place at offense for them at times where they really clear the floor for him, where they stack up on the weak side and let him go to work. One side of the floor and let him go to work more than they ever did for DeMar DeRozan. And so now you're integrating another sort of big piece. I like it overall though, because as you said, it's a talent upgrade. And also Marc Gasol might be a much different, more valuable player when he doesn't have to be your number two.
I think that's fair. I also, I wonder, can you have, you mentioned ball movement. Can you have good ball movement with the current version of Kawhi Leonard on your team? Because like, there's all this stuff about how, you know, Lowry plays completely differently when Leonard's not out there, and the Raptors as a team, their style is just night and day because like you say, Leonard is really just like an ISO guy now. I mean, the ball really stops all the time. And I could see that bothering Gasol, who is just such a purist, you know? And like, I don't know if they're, you know, if Gasol's one of his greatest assets is his vision and his ability to be like an elbow hub. The Raptors, there's a stat out there the other day. I won't get it precisely right, but like they just never, ever run the offense with elbow touches, especially, fair, you know, with their centers. So I don't know. The fit is a little weird. And I'd ask you this in games that matter. And in theory, the Raptors will play a lot of them starting in April. Is Gasol on the floor to finish games? And I know it's matchup dependent, but just sort of like, you know, as objectively as you can think about it, I'm not sure that answer is yes.
Oh, it's not. Objectively, it should be Siakam at center.
Yeah, well, I mean, are you comfortable with that? I don't know.
I think we're going to see, I mean, looking in the later round matchups,
The Celtics. Who's finishing against the Celtics? Because Horford is kind of right in the middle, you know, of the old school. He's more mobile than old school, but like, do you want Siakam on Horford?
You probably don't want him on Horford, but I was thinking like I could see Milwaukee closing with Mirotić and Giannis as their front court.
For sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
You run into the same issue with Valanciunas. I guess there's less of a political debate because his playing time has never been through the roof in Toronto. And so if you wanted to play Ibaka and Siakam, maybe you don't get much pushback from him. That's an interesting question. There's been stuff about that there are probably teams that are hoping Toronto plays big because it makes them easier to attack in crunch time. Mm-hmm. And Ibaka Gasol front court is not going to, I don't think it's going to be a good defensive front court. If you have Siakam there, I think there's probably a pathway to making it fine. That's really what Gasol needs on defense now, is he can't be the anchor. Like you said,
no, he's gonna have to drop. Right. He's gonna play like Valanciunas does, and I think, you know, maybe that might matter less since the Raptors have so many, you know, awesome long rangy perimeter guys where, you know, it's going to be hard to sort of pierce a drop pick and roll defense, but you're going to give up open threes, I think. And that could be a problem, especially against Milwaukee.
Did you have a problem with Memphis's return at all?
It seemed light, but I think that's just what the market was for Gasol because of his age and his player option and all that stuff. It seems light, but I guess I'm kind of taking the approach of like, if there was something better out there, then Memphis would have taken it. Because right. Certainly Toronto wasn't the front runner for most of the, you know, the rumor mill period.
And you didn't get bad money back, because I think if you're going to overpay someone like CJ Miles, at least he's an established shooter. I know he hasn't shot the ball well for a lot of this season, but that's at least someone who has a proven track record of that. Just overpay the shooter. He'll help you space the floor. And Valanciunas is around $17 million next year. That's not terrible. He played well this year before his thumb injury. So that's just, it's better than having to take back Reggie Jackson and John Lohr by a mile.
Oh, God, yeah. And, you know, I think it addressed a, I kind of, big picture wise, I respect a little bit of what Memphis did, because, you know, not trading Conley was a surprise to me, honestly. But, like, it seems like he just wanted to stay, maybe. That's kind of my gut. And he's valuable as a mentor to Jaren Jackson and whoever they're, you know, depending on how their obligations to Boston go, how that pick, their next pick falls. But like, I like Valanciunas there as a guy who makes it so Jackson doesn't have to be a center all the time. Still, I think DeLon Wright, you know, he's probably a starting caliber guard, I guess. But he's low. I don't know. I thought it was okay. But just like in a vacuum, the idea of you traded Mark Gasol and you didn't get a first rounder or anything approaching a star, it feels a little weird, but it is 2019. It's not, you know, it's not 2013.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you said there. And DeLon Wright might end up being affordable as a restricted free agent, having his match rights. I don't know what team is coming at point guards this year with an over-the-top offer.
You wouldn't think.
But with Phoenix and Orlando addressing those needs, I don't know where that offer would come from. What made me uneasy is two things. The subsequent trade they had to make of Garrett Temple and Jermichael Green for the tough-to-watch Avery Bradley, which was made solely because they needed to duck the tax after this 3-for-1 with Toronto.
So that's what a friggin' haul for the Clippers on that one, by the way.
Right, and that's you don't want to be in that position as the Grizzlies when you're giving up the best player, in theory, in the deal, where we have to then go dump these other two guys. And the Clippers, after the Tobias Harris trade, it was everyone thought they just weren't going for the playoffs. But now you have, I'm not saying that Garrett Temple replaces Tobias Harris, but now you have help on the wing with him, and you've upgraded your front court between, you were traded for Zubac, now you have Jermichael Green, so there, and you added Landry Shamet. Maybe they get good minutes from Wilson Chandler once he's healthy. They're interesting as well. Like, it's, they could still, I tend to think it's going to be the Lakers who get that playoff spot, and I can't imagine anyone else falling out, but the Clippers are going to be right there. And to just get that for Avery Bradley, I mean, you force Doc Rivers to open minutes in the backcourt now because he was playing Bradley way too much, and you get out of that $2 million guarantee, which is, yes, you could have stretched it, but if you can save $900,000+ per year and increase your cap space this summer, then why the hell not? You got two quality players on expiring deals.
The Clippers, like, I don't know, man. It's sort of like, I don't know, a few years ago Rockets-ish, in that they're just completely rebuilding, but they're sort of having it both ways. You know, it's like the very calculated rebuild where you just never suck. But you're never, it's unbelievable how quickly they flipped this. I mean, a year ago, a little more than a year ago, Blake Griffin was on this roster. And I mean, DeAndre Jordan and like all that's, it's just, it's unbelievable how they've piled up these assets. And really, like, the other sort of facet of this thing, you know, Temple and Green are both expiring. But if you're a star, if you're Kawhi Leonard, or if you're whoever else they think they're going to get with their max space, I think Temple and Green are exactly the kind of guys I'd want re-signed at reasonable deals, right, to just be support players. And the Clippers have Temple. a definitely Temple. I mean, Temple belongs on a good team. He just, everything he does makes sense on a good team. And it's been so, I don't know if he's, has he ever been on a good team when he's been like this quality version of Garrett? I don't know. Anyway, those guys really fit. And the Clippers still have a bunch of those guys. Plus now you can say, like, there's a non-zero chance that Shea and Shamit are like a quality backcourt of the future. Certainly Gilgeous Alexander, but I'm kind of in on Shamit as just a guy who's going to just run around screens and chuck and get a little stronger as he puts weight on. I just, they have so many avenues to success. Everything they did made sense. Everything was calculated. There were just steps in their process. And I just, Jerry West, man, if you assume Jerry West was at the helm of this, which seems reasonable, man, that guy, he's going to be doing this till he's 100.
I have two more quick questions. I promise I'll get you out of here soon. Of these teams that didn't do anything, and I'm not including the Spurs because they never do anything, Brooklyn, Charlotte, and Utah, who were you most disappointed in that didn't end up doing anything? And I'll accept the Hawks as a write-in because they did those two just like Shelvin Mack for Tyler Dorsey, and they took on Jabari Bird and waived him. They didn't get rid of Jeremy Lin or Dwayne Dedman, which I thought was... I mean, they did this last year with Ilyasova and Bellinelli. Maybe they aren't going to buy those guys out, but that was going to be the next question about the buyout market. So of those three teams, Brooklyn, Charlotte, and Utah, who missed more by not doing anything?
Well, didn't the Timberwolves not do anything either? Am I forgetting something?
The Timberwolves did not do anything, if you want to include them, yeah.
I put them at least in the running for it. I think probably Utah. And that's mainly because it seemed like Conley was theirs at one point, a couple of days before the deadline, I think. And I got so fired up about that possibility and what that might mean for, you know, kind of getting the Jazz. Some people, I think, would argue, depending on which sort of sample of the season you take, that the Jazz really are already up there at the like OKC, Denver kind of second tier level of the West. I don't know if I'm ready to go that far, but it seems like they always have a month long run where they establish that level. And Conley being on that team would have really been interesting to me. So I think it's probably them. Brooklyn, I think, is just like lucky to be in a position where we can even talk about them this way. And it's impressive.
That was, I don't know if you read Lowe's piece, but where they discussed giving Denver's pick and Crab to Memphis for Temple and Jermichael Green. That would have been a hell of a deal for them.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh yeah. That would have been amazing. I think, I don't know. I feel like the Nets are still kind of playing with house money in a weird way because they shouldn't be where they are yet, considering all of the, how far they set themselves back with, you know, that all the trades of their picks several years ago. I think it's probably Utah for me. It's Charlotte. I guess I'm just always sort of perpetually disappointed with Charlotte, and they're just always going to be this team. So, it's probably the Jazz. What did you think?
It was the Jazz for me, and I killed them. And the thing I wrote about NBA teams blowing into the deadline, they have been since they were last under 500. They're 11-3, second best defense, top five net rating. Donovan Mitchell's playing better. Rudy Gobert is probably a top 15 player right now. There's, as you said, there could be that late season surge for them. If they thought they were going to get Conley, and that's why they didn't trade for Otto Porter Jr., that could end up coming to bite them, just because they easily could have beaten that Bulls offer.
Lot of teams could have.
Right. So I don't understand why they were linked to him. So it wasn't like they weren't in discussions with Chicago. If they punted on him for Conley and then didn't get him, that's a problem, because I think that they needed something. They were supposed to be they're supposed to be in the tier above, most probably going to make the playoffs, and they're not right now. Yeah. And to let this trade deadline come and go, I mean, let's journey off the beaten path here too. Harrison Barnes would have been too much of a stylistic reach, but what about Danilo Gallinari after the Tobias Harris trade? I know he's had back issues, but he would have been a good fit. Or when you're looking for another shot creator, did you talk to Atlanta about Jeremy Lin? It just seems that, like, are they saving their first round picks for a Jrue Holiday trade this summer? I just don't know why they were not a team that I thought could sit idly by. It was, when you look at Charlotte and Brooklyn is just so early into their stages of being good. Minnesota, yeah. Perlow turned down offers for Andrew Wiggins, or there was interest, but they didn't want to give him away. They should have gave him away. So I understand.
I would give him away for nothing. Yeah. I would give him away for the cap space that his absence created and nothing else.
You needed to trade for a vast array of bad deals to lose the Andrew Wiggins trade, because there's no contract that extends that long that you're going to take back realistically. But for the Jazz, they and for the Hornets, I actually they messed up because you need to put something around Kemba Walker eventually. But they were also shrewd because no, you don't give up a lightly protected pick for Marc Gasol. You don't.
No, no.
And the salary you were asking Memphis to take back clearly wasn't as non-crappy, I guess I'll put it, or uncrappy as what Toronto was doing. Still, it's 34-year-old Marc Gasol, who if he opts in, you have to overpay him in his age 35 season. So for the Jazz, it was, I'm not saying they should have went out and made a trade for an aging player and gone all in, but you could have and should have really upped the ante for that Mike Conley play. Or again, it seems like you could have just went out and gotten Otto Porter.
I think too, I mean, Porter's a complicated figure for me. Like I just don't know. I think he's overpaid as a role player. And I always go back to like, I can go find somebody that does 85% of what Otto Porter does for the mid-level or less, basically. But to your point, a team like Utah, and you know, you have to think about this with teams like Sacramento too. You know, they talk about, oh, Sacramento's got all this cap space, and well, what does that really mean? Utah is another one of those teams that if you're talking talent acquisition, it's got to be trade or draft. So for them to not succeed at the trade deadline is, I think, you know, doubly troubling, considering their avenues. You know, they have 1/3 fewer avenues toward team improvement because free agency just isn't a Utah thing. And that's true for a lot of other teams, but when you're as good as the Jazz are and as much better as they could have potentially gotten, I think, you know, not pulling anything off when there were opportunities, it sure seems like is a big deal.
Maybe they value their cap space, but with Tobias Harris now, why? Really, right.
Why? I mean,
that was the name everyone was looking at.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, there's certain teams I think you just can't, like your cap space is not the same as everybody else's, or as you know, really, maybe we should think of it as like, there's really more like 5 or 6 teams whose cap space matters. And, you know, where you can say like having clear cap space is a big deal. And like 20 some odd teams, it's more like, you know, you got to be really good or otherwise you're just going to have to draft and trade for your talent.
Are there any buyout names that you're watching specifically? I know Robin Lopez. Are we just assuming he's going to, he's already been bought out. Are we just assuming he's going to Golden State?
Wait a minute. I didn't see that. Did he get, he got bought out? Lopez did?
They were brokering. He's getting bought out. I don't care what the Bulls say. He's getting bought out. So
okay. He better. He's my number one guy. Just cause one, cause I love him. And, did you see when he was asked about,
Miritich yeah. having to play with Brooke?
Yeah. He's like, he's already had the superior experience of playing with me. I love Robin Lopez. But aside from that, like, and if it is the Warriors, he's just, you know, you could say the Warriors need more shooting on the second unit or a wing or whatever, but he makes perfect sense to me on Golden State. And if that works out, that's one of the another clean, you know, it's a Miritich-esque level of clean fit if he ends up on the Warriors. I was surprised that there aren't more Hawks rumored to be bought out. I think Chris Vivelmore just earlier today said that the plan is they're not going to buy Dedmon or these other, particularly Dedmon, but a bunch of they're not going to do it. They're not going to buy guys out, which is surprising to me. Other than that, there's like nobody out there that really blows me away. Like I don't know who wants J.R. Smith. I don't know who wants Gortat. I don't know who wants Enes Kanter, Kaminsky. Eventually, I don't know. I don't know who really blows me away. Wes Matthews is definitely the number one guy, but I guess he wants minutes and chance to sort of showcase his skill with the Pacers, but. Yeah, it's probably Lopez for me, but Matthews would have been huge. If you're pipe dreaming for Golden State, Matthews would have been incredible.
Yeah, I thought that too, but he was clearly, like you said, valuing playing time. Same thing with Ellington going to Detroit. And that's what Atlanta, it makes sense that they wouldn't buy out Jeremy Lin or Dedmon, and maybe Lin puts butts in seats for them. But after what they did last year with Ilyasova and Bellinelli, it is weird that they're, I'm reluctant to say that they effed up with the trade then, but it's weird that they're not giving away, like doing something with these expiring contracts that don't fit their timeline. Is it because they don't want to take on money? That would also be weird. I thought Travis Schlenk said the opposite.
Yeah.
If you had to pick who's more likely to get bought out, Jeremy Lin or Dewayne Dedmon?
That's a good question. I could see, I kind of think Dedmon actually. And I guess, although just backing up a second, I'm starting to wonder if the Hawks are taking this approach where they're kind of like, they're not shipping guys out to potentially places they don't want to go to bring back assets as like a way to sort of make it look like they're the type of organization that does right by its veterans, you know?
Ooh,
like, hey,
point.
We're not going to dump you somewhere. We're going to, and I don't know how much currency that really is worth, but I think it's not nothing. And it would justify why they aren't just being like, yeah, we'll send you whoever, just give us like a heavily protected pick and we'll take on a bunch of money and whatever. I think maybe they're operating that way. It would explain it. But I don't know. Do you think it's Deadman or Lynn? And if you think it's Lynn, where do you think Lynn makes the most sense?
I want it to be Lynn, but I would think it's Deadman. Okay. Even though they don't have like all these front court players. They have John Collins, and then there's Alex Lynn, one of the Plumleys, Miles Plumley, Spellman. Like, that's it. That's, unless you want to play Torrey Prince of the Four a bunch, and he hasn't really fared well defensively there. If Lynn was bought out, I don't know if he would want to prioritize like winning, but if Toronto would make sense because now they need a playmaker, and they needed a playmaker beforehand. Patrick McCaw isn't it, and then you just traded away DeLon Wright. So he would fit there. But in terms of playing time, if he went to Detroit, he should immediately start. Their best.
Oh, my God.
He becomes their best.
Detroit needs a playmaker. Detroit needs someone to do something with the basketball besides Blake Griffin. That's one of the most unwatchable teams in the league for that reason. Yeah, he wouldn't be great there. I mean, like, there are a lot of teams that – he makes sense as a backup for. I don't know. Deadman to me seems like if he's your
backup
center. Don't
you think he'd be a better fit for the Warriors than Robin Lopez? They already have physical with DeMarcus, like that physical big with DeMarcus Cousins. Why not get one that is going to be, he can defend in space a little bit. He has 3-point range now.
I have to confess something to you. I really like Kevon Looney still. I'm still super in on Kevon
Looney.
Well,
then you shouldn't want them to sign Lopez either. They should.
No. Here's why. And it's Cousins has looked just, I mean, a million times better mobility wise and in any other physical facet you want to mention since he came back than I possibly could have imagined. But the dude picks up 4 fouls in like the first 6 minutes he plays, and his conditioning sucks. Like, he still is that same guy that doesn't run down the floor a lot and that commits at least 3 stupid fouls a game because he's tired or frustrated. So to say that, like, well, the Warriors have their bulky big, and don't even, I mean, let's not also forget that, like, he could just get hurt again. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that a big guy with a leg injury could have a kinetic chain issue or whatever. So I'm not sold that the Warriors have enough, like, heft on the inside. So that's why Lopez makes a lot of sense to me, aside from me just personally liking him. But I trust Looney to be like their switchier, I liked what he did in the Rocket series. There are a lot of numbers last year that said he wasn't good, but just watching him physically move around, I just like what Looney does. So I'm okay with that. I just think Lopez would be some good Cousins insurance.
Deadman would probably then look good. The Lakers or the Bucks. I think either of those teams would be great fits for him.
We can't keep giving the Bucks really good players. Like, they have enough. I think they're set. They're going to – are they still on pace, do you know, for like a historic – probably not anymore because they were up in double digits in terms of their SRS on Basketball Reference. Like, they were on pace to be, you know, in the level of teams where like 95% of the time if you post this SRS over a season, you're winning the title. They probably aren't there anymore, but, man, they're loaded.
No, I didn't even know that was a thing for them.
I mean, their net rating is still, it's like in the high nines right now.
I just looked it up as you were talking. They are 11th in NBA history in SRS.
There you go. Yeah, they're still up there then.
Looking at the teams in front of them. I think, are they all title teams? No, 2015, 2016 Spurs are not. 2014-15 Warriors are. 91-92 Bulls, those are champions, right? That's in the...
Yep. Uh-huh. That's the first three-peat.
2015-2016 Warriors are not. 96-97 Bulls, yes. 71-72 Bucks. Is that team? And
That's either the best team to not win a title, or they did win a title, I think.
Well, there's 2 Bucks teams in here, so I'm thinking, yeah, they lost this one. So I'm thinking the best SRS in NBA history is from the 70-71 Bucks, which I think they were the ones that then won the title. You have the 71-72 Lakers, the 16-17 Warriors, and the 95-96 Bulls. So there's, I would think, the 10 teams in front of them, roughly, it's 3 of them didn't win the title.
Yeah, so they're there. I mean, the Bucks are. This is why, like, in doing power rankings every week, like, I just sort of don't care what happens to the Bucks week to week because their resume is on par with the greatest regular season teams of all time, and so they're just never going to be lower than second. They're. I don't know, man.
So let's give them to Dwayne Dedman, is what you're saying.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, let's. Why don't we just give them their pick of the buyout market at this point?
Another name, and this will be the last thing. I think it's Taj Gibson is someone to watch. I feel like if Minnesota, I know there's only like a couple weeks, but I thought that was probably I think people wanted them to move on from their veterans, but no one was taking his contract as it was without setting back bad money. Those big expiring deals are hard to move for another expiring deal. But if they fall out of the playoff race, I know they're sort of close right now, but I don't know how you look at them if you're them internally and say, oh, we can make a postseason push. So he would be, what if he went to the Warriors as sort of the bridge between Lopez and Dedman, and he's this like store brand.
That's a lot of
store brand David West or something. Cause he's not, as
that's
good
a lot
a passer,
of fun,
but Taj Gibson,
I like that
state.
Can you explain why Anthony Tolliver wasn't even like rumored to go anywhere?
You thought there was enough teams that needed front court floor spacing.
Yeah, that's still a thing in the NBA, right? We still want spacing at the forward spots. That hasn't changed. I don't know. That could have worked.
Maybe he's someone that gets bought out too. He's expiring as well.
Yeah, I just always wonder, like, is there really no market at all? Like, when you're buying a guy out, you're getting nothing. Was there not a second? I guess, you know, you got to match salary and blah, blah, blah. But, like, it's always surprising to me how many guys get bought out when, like, you think that a team could have got just something.
I feel like Charlotte would have done Anthony Tolliver for Frank Kaminsky straight up at this point, like, or something like that. So I don't know why. He's only making $5.8 million. That should have been a deal that I think that they would be able to move.
Yeah,
he doesn't play
a
lot with them. He's still shooting. He's shooting the ball fine from three. So I just don't know if the Timberwolves, there's with the Hawks, I think you can just say they should buy those guys out at this point unless they don't care about hurting their lottery odds or something. But with the Timberwolves and like some of these other teams, it's tougher because they have to view themselves as just categorically out of the playoff race. And I don't know that the Timberwolves will ever get there.
That's a good point.
I hope Leonard Dedman gets put up because I think that they would want, either one of them would really help a team.
Yep, I think so too. Although I think they're probably both valuable to Atlanta too. Even though Atlanta's goals are very different than the teams that they might end up on, but I think
Atlanta's looking at it as we're going to give you guys a ton of money for a year as placeholders.
It could be. Yeah, I don't know. I keep coming back to how surprising it is that Atlanta really didn't, you know, start hauling in stuff. You know, that's what you'd want a team in their position to do.
It is a bad look though, right? I want them to get bought out, but if they do this again, where you put one or two really good players on the market for nothing, like they did with Bellinelli and Ilyasova, that's not the best. That's not the best look.
No, unless we're going to go with my completely made up theory of they're trying to, look like a franchise that will take care of you.
Kevin Durant signing with the Hawks this summer. Grant first.
There you go. Yep.
Thank you for giving me so much of your time and just recapping the trade deadline fallout. There was just so much stuff that happened. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. If you guys do not follow Grant on Twitter, you are making a mistake. He does not clog up your timeline. And when he does tweet, it's either hysterical or he's throwing in some good retweets there. So follow him on Twitter @GT_Hughes, spelled exactly as it sounds. You can follow Andy on Twitter @AndrewDBailey. I am @DanFavale, FAVALE. Follow Hardwood Knox @HardwoodKnox. And please continue rating, reviewing, and subscribing to us on iTunes. We will be eternally in your debt. Until next time, I leave you all with a shout out to Kyle Anderson and no one else.
The all-new Toyota RAV4 asks, what if? What if your ride was refined and rugged at the same time? Introducing a car that's got style and substance to spare. The all-new RAV4 Limited. Featuring a sophisticated, muscular new exterior and available options like a premium JBL audio system and panoramic roof. The all-new RAV4 Limited. Toyota. Let's go places. JBL and Clarifier, registered trademarks of Harman International Industries Incorporated.